It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. State Democrats and Republicans draw together supporters holding their respective state conventions in Green Bay and La Crosse. We look at takeaways from these events, and you can be part of the discussion about party politics and pressing issues. Call in with a question or comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jesse O'Poyan is state government and politics reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covered the Democratic State Convention. Jesse, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Good morning. And Jack Kelly with us as well, a Wisconsin politics reporter for the Capital Times, covered the GOP's convention this weekend. Jack, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Jack, let's start with you. This weekend, as you were at the Republican State Convention, what was the mood, the energy like for the GOP gathering in La Crosse?
Folks are always fired up. At conventions like this, it's an opportunity to meet with the other diehards of your party. And in this case, it was the Republicans in La Crosse. People were excited. It's an off-year convention, so it lacked maybe a little bit of the gravitas of a big election year convention where you have candidates coming through and you have speeches and everything else. But folks were fired up. Republicans were billing this as a way to prepare for 2024. And Brian Schimming, the state party chairman, told me that he thought the convention was a success when it came to that.
Any through lines that you saw in the themes that emerged in the speeches?
I think the convention was an interesting weekend to highlight a little bit of the disconnect almost between some of the grassroots diehards, the folks that are members of county Republican parties that knock doors, that do the on the ground work to try to win elections, and some elected Republicans and party leadership, just in terms of what they want to focus on, what issues matter the most to them, and how they want to move forward to become competitive in statewide elections again. Wisconsin Republicans have struggled over the last few years to win statewide, Ron Johnson being one of probably the biggest exception. So it was an interesting to see kind of that disconnect between what local grassroots folks are interested in and wanting to focus on and what the kind of professional face of the party wants to focus on.
Jesse, turning to you, on June 10th and 11th, you covered the Democrats' state convention in Green Bay. What were some of your takeaways? What was the focus of those who attended?
Sure. Well, like Jack said, it's an off-year convention, so it's maybe not quite as bustling as some that you would attend when there's a lot of elections on the line. But the theme for Democrats was really reelecting Senator Tammy Baldwin and reelecting President Joe Biden. The party chair Ben Wickler said it's the three B's or the triple B going forward: Biden, Baldwin, and blue down ballot. So electing Democrats up and down the ballot. Democrats are feeling pretty good right now. They've won 14 of the last 17 statewide elections, including a really big state Supreme Court race most recently. So for Democrats, it's really about maintaining that momentum and, not getting complacent and too satisfied with the wins that they've had, but trying to figure out how to maintain that energy going forward.
Their theme was working for Wisconsin. I'm wondering, did that theme manifest in the speeches or in the breakout sessions?
It was a lot of conversation about kind of how in particular how Tammy Baldwin has worked with the Biden administration and sort of bringing home some federal policy wins for Wisconsinites. So infrastructure funding, promoting made in Wisconsin and made in the U.S. jobs, expanding access to healthcare, restoring access to abortion, some of Tammy Baldwin's work in particular with veterans and farmers, and expanding access to healthcare, and particularly mental health care for those demographics in particular.
Jesse O'Poyan with us, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Jack Kelly with the Cap Times, as we talk about the two state party conventions. And you can join in with your observations, your questions at 800-642-1234. Jack, I want to turn to one of the speeches. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson addressed the convention Saturday, saying pro-life is the most compassionate approach to the abortion issue. And Johnson again pushed for a one-time single referendum to resolve the question, at what point does society have the responsibility to protect life?
But if we as Republicans ask that question repeatedly, the first thing that does is acknowledges that a woman has a right. You may not necessarily agree with what decision that woman may make, but that woman has a right. But at some point in time, the unborn child within her also has a right.
And that audio, courtesy of Wisconsin Eye. Jack, what stood out to you with how Johnson framed this issue?
This is an extension of how he framed the abortion issue going back to his reelection campaign against Mandela Barnes last year. Other Democrats were very successful in using abortion and abortion policy to win elections. Tony Evers tagged Tim Michaels on this in the governor's race. Josh Call made similar efforts against Eric Toney in the AG's race. Those Republicans struggled to put together to articulate a clear message on where they stand on abortion. Senator Johnson offered this kind of nuanced take of having a referendum statewide. I think it's important. It's not clear exactly how this would work if this were possible. And I also just think it shows that Republicans are continuing to grapple with how they should message on abortion. Obviously, safe and legal abortion is very popular. We see this in polling. It has bipartisan support. And I think it shows that Republicans and, pretty savvy Republican politicians like Ron Johnson are continuing to grapple with how do you message on abortion when it is something that has cost you so many elections.
Jesse, turning to Democrats, U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin said Wisconsin residents have lost their right to abortion, collective bargaining, and fair voting because of the gerrymandering of electoral maps.
These rights, these freedoms have all been attacked, curtailed, or even taken away entirely by the far right wing. But I stand on this stage knowing we just voted to send Judge Janet Protasiewicz to our state's highest court to defend our rights and freedoms.
Again, from Wisconsin Eye there. Jesse, how did other Democratic convention speakers talk about the impact of liberal justices who now serve as the majority on the state Supreme Court?
This is a pretty prevalent theme. And again, going back to this sort of momentum question, Democrats are excited and I think hopeful. In particular, the abortion issue, there is an existing court case challenging that 1849 ban. It's currently in Dane County, but it's very much expected to make its way to the state Supreme Court and would do so after Judge Janet Protasiewicz takes the bench and shifts that liberal majority or the majority to a liberal majority. So there's hope there, I think, among Democrats that will be reconsidered. And again, that the electoral maps will be reconsidered, but also a bit of a sense that even if the abortion issue in particular is settled or changed at the state level, the thought then is that the fight would continue at the federal level, and whether there's a national ban or future court cases that could continue to influence that. I think Democrats are trying to drive home the message that it wouldn't end just with a favorable ruling here in Wisconsin.
Jack, turning back to Republicans and who would take on Tammy Baldwin, we heard this month U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher confirmed he will not challenge Baldwin for election next year. How are Republicans who attended the convention feeling about that race?
Yeah, that's a great question. I got to talk to a couple of folks who are also rumored to be getting into the race. Representative Tom Tiffany, who represents most of northern Wisconsin, Eric Hovde, who is a businessman who has run for the Senate before and is weighing another bid. It was interesting. Wispolitics.com did their annual straw poll at the convention. I think Tom Tiffany did end up winning the straw poll among convention delegates. But I think folks are really looking for somebody who can win. Tammy Baldwin is obviously, you know, she's been elected twice for a reason. She's very, very savvy politician who's popular in parts of the state that other Democrats are not. And so I think they're looking for somebody who can win. And I think a lot of folks would love to avoid a messy primary. Wisconsin, you know, elections favor incumbents. That's especially the case in Wisconsin with the primary being so late. Primary happens in August. You basically only have 90 days for a general election. They're looking for someone who can win. And I think a lot of people would like to avoid a messy primary.
Jack Kelly, state politics reporter at the Cap Times. We have Jesse O'Poyen here, cover state politics at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And you can join in along the way as we talk about party politics in our battleground state. Call in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Republican Party of Wisconsin hosts their state convention over the weekend in La Crosse, the theme Red to the Roots. And the Democratic Party of Wisconsin hosts their state convention in Green Bay earlier this month with the theme Working for Wisconsin. We get takeaways from these gatherings. You can join in, call in, share thoughts, ask a question. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. State politics reporters Jesse O'Poyen at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Jack Kelly at the Cap Times. Stay with us. Jack, I want to turn to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss at the Republican convention over the weekend. We heard Governor Evers telling Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week he would veto any state budget that includes a proposed $32 million cut to the UW system's DEI efforts. What did Assembly Speaker Voss say at the convention about diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Yeah, I mean, Speaker Voss has taken aim at DEI efforts, particularly in the UW system. He was reiterating comments that he made, previously earlier in the week about how taxpayer dollars shouldn't be spent on those kinds of efforts and how they would, you know, try to cut the UW system budget if they were going to be. He himself is an alumnus of UW-Whitewater, and he, you know, told the crowd that he was embarrassed to be a UW system alum because of its DEI efforts. I think it is important to note, though, we don't know exactly what a cut, if any, will actually look like. The State Budget Committee has not taken that up, but they are likely going to do it this week. So I guess we'll find out in the next few days.
Jesse, what do you make of, Speaker Voss's words at the convention and in the lead up?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the lead up, as you mentioned, he's talked about it's about $32 million that Assembly Republicans have targeted that, they did a records request looking for positions that were associated with DEI programming. And he told reporters at the end of the week that, you know, that's not even, you know, that's not enough in his eyes necessarily, that there's certainly more funding that's being spent on DEI programming. And so while that $32 million figure is out there, and while Governor Evers has said that he would veto a budget that cuts the UW system, especially that amount, Speaker Voss said he's still waiting to hear what Senate Republicans want to do. And if they were to propose an even deeper cut, again, particularly targeted at DEI programming, he would be supportive of that.
The Democrats' convention schedule included caucus meetings for people of color and disabilities, as well as focused on rural and environmental issues. What might this say about how the party intends to canvass voters?
Sure. And I didn't attend any of the caucus meetings, but Democrats have been losing in rural areas in recent years. That's no secret. So I think, you know, the constant question for Democrats is how to reclaim some of those votes and how to reconnect with voters in those areas. It's also no secret that environmental issues are a big deal in those areas, particularly water quality. So I know that that's going to be a big focus for Democrats going forward.
Jack, at the convention Saturday, state Republicans approved non-binding resolutions. What stood out to you there?
So they approved a whole slate of them. Mm-hmm. And most of them they did in one single vote. though there were a handful that they pulled out to debate on their own. I think, again, the resolutions really show the contrast between what the grassroots, like the day-to-day county party Republicans, how there's this kind of, I don't know if it's a rift or if there's just a contrast between what they want and what kind of the professional face of the party. So the, you know, Brian Schimming, the state party chair, elected officials, some of the RPW staff want. A big thing being is that Brian Schimming has now become a big advocate for early voting and mail-in ballots. Of course, then, you know, delegates and, you know, people at the convention approved this non-binding resolution, something along the lines of securing our elections. And in it, they advocate for returning to only same day, you know, election day in-person voting. So the resolutions are a reminder that where the grassroots of the party is might be different from where the leadership of the party is. And I think that that was very telling in something like the stance that they took on elections.
That is really interesting. I mean, here you have the leader of the party advocating for early voting, and then you have these non-binding restrictions that say, you know, forcing college students to vote in their hometowns instead of on campus and ending early voting. It really is a stark contrast there.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think that the college students resolution actually was tabled, so they didn't take it up. But it was certainly a point of debate. I mean, they debated a resolution about the sanctity of human life. So that was focused on both abortion and, assisted suicide. And I think that it is really interesting. I mean, you had attendees, delegates standing up at the microphone, telling these very personal stories about their own experience with, you know, miscarriages or other medical emergencies that they had during pregnancy, and talking about how, you know, the life-saving treatment I would have needed would not have been available to me today because of the Wisconsin's abortion law. And people seemed to respect that. And some people were billing it as, we should be doing this because it's right. Others were dealing as, we should soften our stance on abortion policy because it's what we need to do to win elections. And then when they come to actually vote on the resolution, they've overwhelmingly approved it, and it included provisions, like a personhood provision to consider, a fetus as a person to give them the same protections that you or I would have. So it was a really interesting juxtaposition between where party leadership is and where the grassroots are.
Talking about the two state party conventions, takeaways with two political reporters, Jack Kelly there with the Cap Times, Jesse O'Poyen with us, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can join in 800-642-1234. Jesse, Governor Tony Evers addressing the Democratic convention. What was his message to his base? What stood out to you?
Sure. It was a lot of reiterating perceived policy wins, both at the state level and at the federal level. What was a little bit interesting, he was really mostly focused on boosting Joe Biden and Tammy Baldwin, but he did kind of make a joke at the beginning about potentially being called three-term Tony, which would indicate he could be considering a re-election bid. His campaign kind of downplayed that, said he just hasn't made any decisions yet, but he talked about bipartisanship quite a bit. He pointed to the recent shared revenue agreement that came as a result of negotiations with Republican legislative leaders and Milwaukee area Democratic leaders. Talked about kind of the bounce back from COVID, what his administration's done on that. The state's projected $7 billion surplus. But then also, pointed to things that Democrats need to work on in the future. Like we mentioned earlier, clean water, supporting farmers and veterans, implementing gun safety laws, legalizing marijuana, some of those being areas that there's room for bipartisanship, and some of that being pretty Democratic led pieces of legislation.
In our last moments together, Jack, which of Wisconsin's down ballot elections are looking the most interesting? What are you watching for?
Oh, gosh. I guess what I'm really watching for is, will there be a lawsuit challenging the state's legislative voting districts, so the districts that make up the Assembly and the state Senate? If there is, how fast will that lawsuit move? I think, come 24, we could potentially have an election where you know, control of one or both of the chambers of the legislature is on the line. And we haven't seen that in Wisconsin for quite some time. So that's kind of what I'm keeping track of.
Jesse, what is your eye on?
I would agree with Jack. You know, both the abortion lawsuit, how quickly that moves to the state Supreme Court, and how quickly, or I guess what kind of an impact that has on elections going forward. But on a broader level, the electoral maps, I think, are going to really drive what we're looking at going forward.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jesse Opoyan covers state politics at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Jack Kelly is a state politics reporter at the Cap Times. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you have aligned to a state lawmaker as we do a roundup on legislation advancing through the Capitol in this biennial budget season. And you can join in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Republican Representative Scott Allen's district includes portions of Waukesha, Genesee, and Mukwonago. Representative Allen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Good morning. And you have a co-authored legislation which would increase the maximum prison time for people who produce or sell drugs that cause another person's death. Why should penalties increase?
Well, it not just increases the maximums, but more importantly, it increases the minimums. You know, it really depends on your perspective. Is the glass half full or is the glass half empty? The important thing with looking at it from a vantage point of minimums is right now someone can cause the death of another individual by way of dealing drugs. And according to the minimum sentence in the category that applies, it could only be a fine. So there is no prison sentence in that circumstance. So really, the goal was not so much to look at the maximums and anticipate that, was rather to look at the minimums to say, if you take someone's life by way of dealing drugs, I think there should be a minimum prison sentence of a certain period of time, whatever that time may be, according to judicial discretion and what the statutes allow, but not simply a slap on the wrist and a fine. So we approached it from that vantage point, primarily because we are facing, as we all know, an opioid and really a fentanyl crisis in Wisconsin. The latest figures from 2021 show that 1,700 individuals lost their lives to drug overdose in Wisconsin. That's a lot of people.
When you look at the pushback from organizations like the ACLU of Wisconsin criticizing the bill, the ACLU says the punitive drug laws are ineffective at reducing drug use or overdoses. What is your response to that?
Well, I'd like to see the ACLU have that conversation with the families of the victims. Many of these people are young people that are succumbing to overdose deaths and unexpected deaths. A couple of years ago, we passed a bill in the state of Wisconsin that said we're going to make fentanyl test strips free and available to the public. They're legal and free, and anybody can go to their local county health department and pick them up. If you're engaged in the activity of dealing drugs, there's no excuse for you to be peddling basically a poison that kills people. You can get the fentanyl test strips, as many as you'd like, and test whatever you have in your possession to make sure you're not dealing fentanyl. If you don't take it seriously, you know, it's one pill can kill. I mean, this is such a deadly, deadly drug that, you know, we need to make sure people understand how serious we are in the state of Wisconsin. And I think when individuals are simply being fined for dealing this, it's not a serious enough penalty to cause anybody any degree of, I guess, concern or apprehension about possibly dealing poisonous drugs.
I wonder, Representative Allen, is committing people to prison or keeping people in prison longer, is that a solution to what you see going on with this drug epidemic?
Well, I do know that it keeps at least one individual, right? If we put one individual in prison who's dealing drugs, it at least keeps them off the street. Does it solve our problem? No, it doesn't solve our problem. Is it a step in the right direction? I believe it is.
Talking about recent legislative priorities with Representative Scott Allen with us, represents the 97th Assembly District. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to shared revenue now. State Assembly passed a shared revenue bill last week. Are you happy with the shared revenue bill as it goes to Governor Tony Evers' desk?
No, I'm definitely not happy with it. It doesn't fix the shared revenue formula. It merely augments the shared revenue formula with additional batch of revenue through the sales tax, but it doesn't fix the formula. The formula is broken. And, I guess sometimes we don't always get the things that we want. I advocated for a reset, a more fair distribution effect. One of my colleagues, Representative Mako from the Green Bay area, had proposed a delinquency aid or a discrepancy aid formula such that there would be an adjustment over time, not that there would be one point in time where there would be a major shift, thus creating winners and losers. But instead, what this shared revenue formula does is it, you know, kind of locks in the losers, so to speak, in the shared revenue distribution. For instance, I represent a significant portion of Waukesha County. Waukesha County is the third most populous county in the state. Waukesha County produces the third greatest income tax out of all the counties for the state of Wisconsin. Waukesha County also produces the third largest amount of sales tax revenue for the state of Wisconsin. And yet, Waukesha County in the shared revenue aid distribution ranks dead last out of 72 counties on a per capita aid basis. My argument is that government exists for the people. So we should be distributing shared revenue aid to our local governments based upon population. That just seems logical to me. In a county like Waukesha, where you have so many people, you've got more death certificates that need to be issued, more streets, people driving the streets, more drug issues and juvenile delinquency issues. It just comes with people. And the counties are really an extension of state government, really enforcing the mandates of state government. It seems to me that we should be distributing shared revenue a little bit more equitably based upon our populations, not based upon, I don't know, some formula that was fixed 40 years ago.
Given your perspective there, what do you make of the new stipulations for Milwaukee in terms of how it funds government and how local government is organized? Is that fair to the city's residents?
Well, at the end of the day, we passed the bill in the assembly. I voted against the bill in its initial form, hoping to advocate for a better distribution of the aid. And then as it got amended in the Senate and came back to the assembly, I ended up voting in favor of the amendment, thus, you know, agreeing with the package. It's not a perfect package. The reason I voted in favor of it is precisely because I felt compelled, number one, to be a good neighbor for our counterparts to the east in Milwaukee County, Milwaukee City, to do our best to help out. But also, secondly, I'm getting distracted.
I heard a little ding.
I don't know what's going on, but But also because I appreciate the fact that the governor and the leaders of the legislature actually talked and they actually negotiated in good faith. And, you know,
you found that productive.
Both sides walked away maybe feeling like they gave up too much. And that's generally probably a good position for compromise. And so I really wanted, I did it, my second vote in favor was really just a nod to that kind of bipartisan negotiation, good faith negotiation. So I hope we see more of that.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, you saw work coming together on both sides of the aisle. You know, Governor Evers working with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Lemahieu, and you really found that to be a productive way of getting work done.
Amazing, isn't it?
Let's turn to education funding. This month, you voted to raise the cap on the amount of money school districts are allowed to raise from local taxpayers. The change increases from $10,000 to $11,000 per student. Bill would also increase per pupil aid for private voucher and independent charter schools. What do you hope this bill accomplishes?
Well, it does a number of things. I mean, it gets our choice schools on maybe a level playing field for funding. That can offer opportunities for other students that maybe have been shut out due to, you know, insufficient resources. So I'm excited about that. I also represent two school districts that are low revenue ceiling school districts. That's Maquoneago and Waukesha. And so the challenge that they have is that they have a hard time competing with school districts literally 15 minutes away that have significantly higher revenue ceilings. And so they're competing to get quality teachers and retain quality teachers. And, you know, there's not an abundant supply of teachers these days. So certainly a school district wants to be able to compete to retain good quality teachers. And so passing this bill will allow school districts like Maquoneago and Waukesha to be able to step that up and continue to compete and to continue to offer a quality educational product.
That requires money. And we talked on our program about the teacher shortage, public and private schools both struggling to hire teachers. Will this budget address this issue with this funding formula and pay to teachers?
Absolutely. There's a significant number of school districts all across the state that fall into that category of being low-level revenue school districts. And they, too, have an equal challenge of competing. There are plenty of school districts where they're not faced with that. And there is, you know, frankly, an abundance of cash. None of them would confess that, but, you know, we have to be honest. There's a great disparity, anywhere from $16,000 per student to now this new revenue limit will be $11,000 per student. Well, you multiply that change of $4,000 or $5,000, that discrepancy across, you know, hundreds, thousands of students potentially in a school district, and we're talking real money.
Republican Representative Scott Allen of Waukesha with us as we discuss bills that are advancing and his state budget priorities. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with the question, share thoughts with a lawmaker at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Republican State Representative Scott Allen of Waukesha on education measures, other bills that he's backing. You can call in, be part of the politics discussion, join in with a question or share a comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You are the co-sponsor of legislation that would prohibit state funds from being used to purchase materials that are deemed as obscene. Why does Wisconsin need this legislation?
Well, the Common School Fund provides a pipeline of resources for schools. And the schools are, you know, awfully busy and engaged with instruction and executing their education plans for all the different grades. This is really a companion bill to another bill that would eliminate the immunity that is currently provided by statutes for education officials providing obscene materials or giving obscene materials to minors. So this is to sort of be go hand in hand to say, okay, the state has a burden of responsibility as well if we're going to expect that our local school officials are going to be making sure they're doing a good job of providing quality resources that don't push the limits in terms of obscenity, then we need to partner with them and make sure that we're not providing a stream of obscene materials that they have to fight against.
A stream obscene materials. What constitutes obscene materials?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question. Our state statutes has a definition for what is considered obscene. We looked at it carefully to say, is there some reason why that statute is insufficient? And I don't believe it is. It is well written, I think, and it addresses the concern of like, how do we characterize obscene? And it boils down to what is in the community interest of or community definition of what obscene might be. Because obviously we all have a different perspective about it, but sometimes things are blatantly clear. What we don't want to do is have the state be the guardians of obscenity, I guess, or of purity. I think that should be handled at a local level. I think that the school boards and school districts, they know their communities well. We've got 424 school districts across the state. I think they should be more closely monitoring their materials to determine whether it meets their community standard for obscenity or not, rather than having some statewide sort of mandate. Or, you know, some people say, is this about banning books? No, there's no ban of books anywhere in the proposed legislation. It's really about making sure that we're paying attention to it. To make sure that things don't slip through the cracks.
But would it have a chilling effect?
Well, I don't believe so. I think that, you've got right now, it's supposed to be within the educational interest, or there has to be an educational value to it in order for material to not be considered obscene. So I think there's a strong case to be made to say, there has to be a substantial and substantiated educational value. In the event that there isn't, I think that we should take a step back, take a look at something carefully and say, is this really of educational value or do I want to risk it? Now, some people say, well, why would we do this to teachers? Why would we put teachers in the line of fire as it comes to their vulnerability? Well, because the rest of us are. If you or I were to give any obscene materials, what's considered by state statute, the same state statute obscene, to any other minor, that would be a felony. But if a teacher does it in school, it's not a felony. That doesn't make sense. I think that the teachers ought to be making sure we are handing out materials in schools that isn't obscene. And some people say, well, now we put the teachers in the line of fire. Well, in order for that to happen, if the teacher were distributing some materials that were considered obscene based upon this new bill, they would first be faced with scrutiny at the school district level. So someone complains to the school, the principal, the school board, and the school board would have every opportunity to review and take action. In the event that the complainant was not satisfied with the school's or school board's reaction, then they would file a complaint with the district attorney. The district attorney would have to review the case. And if the district attorney felt it was appropriate that prosecution should commence, they have to take it under current statutes to the attorney general. And the attorney general, now this is unusual because we don't have this with other statutes. The local district attorneys have full authority to file a lawsuit or a prosecution against a criminal. But in this case, as it relates to obscene materials, it has to go all the way up to the Attorney General. So there's plenty of review along the way to make sure we're not capriciously prosecuting someone for distributing what they thought was valuable education materials and somebody else misconstrued as being obscene.
We're talking about recent legislative priorities with Representative Scott Allen of Waukesha. You can join in along the way at 800-642-1234. Linnea is here from Janesville. Hi, Linnea.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to bring up with the lawmaker?
So first of all, I just wanted to point out that I know that you referred to fentanyl and worrying about, you know, a little bit in a pill can kill someone. However, I think it's a dangerous message to only be referring to it in pill form. Almost 2 years ago now, my son was poisoned by fentanyl that was in marijuana that he had purchased. So I think I would have never dreamt that that would happen. But younger people or people that are experimenting, it's important for them to realize it's in all sorts of things out on the street, which leads me to wonder if Wisconsin had legalized marijuana, would that have happened? You know, being a parent of someone that, you know, I've lost to fentanyl, I don't agree with the stronger the penalties, you know, being increased, even with it hitting home like this. You know, I think it's kind of looking at the wrong end of the problem. If we did more that people didn't buy the drugs, it would put the drug dealers out of business. So I think we need safer usage. We need better treatment. We kind of need to look at it from that end.
Linnea, thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing your story. My condolences. Representative Allen, go ahead.
Linnea, my condolences as well. I'm so sorry that for your loss. There's just too many people that, and we all know somebody who has lost somebody to a drug overdose, and I feel bad for you. I think that I agree that we need sort of an all of the above strategy to addressing the concerns that we have relative to the pervasiveness of drugs and the safety of drugs. As I understand it, you're right, Linnea, the fentanyl can be in all sorts of different things. People might think they're, you know, just smoking marijuana or what have you, and it can have fentanyl in it. As I understand it, those who are purveying the drugs are attempting to utilize fentanyl because of its addictive nature.
10 seconds left.
It is super addictive. And so they are putting it in drugs, but they're not the scientists and they're getting the measurements wrong. And that's why you can go in an instant from something that's not lethal to lethal.
Representative Allen, thank you for joining us. Scott Allen serves the 97th District in the Assembly. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.